This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty, fresh off a celebration of him and his teammates' Super Bowl victory from about a decade ago that we can certainly get into because, Chris, as we break down the NFL weekend that was, as we talk to Mina Kimes, Tyler Fulgham and company, and get you ready for Monday Night Football coming up here, we're going to settle on a few things. Things we think we know about good teams like the Cowboys and the Arizona Cardinals. Things we are starting to think we know about teams struggling like the Cleveland Browns. But I think it's safe to say that from what we saw this weekend in the New York Giants Stadium at MetLife, you and your teammates might have been the best thing that's been on that field in quite some time.
Yeah, if we were going to do a part two of the Factory of Sadness, I think the New York Giants would be on deck to be able to do it, man. I mean, we're talking about the team being 19-51 since the start of the 2017 season, which is the worst record in the NFL during that span. So, yeah, the celebration of the Super Bowl 46 team at halftime was the only win that the Giants fans saw on Sunday.
It was brutal. We will get to more on that, more with the Giants' problems in a little bit, because it was a cool moment. I was in the stadium, actually, and got to see Chris and his teammates go out for this. So it was a fun celebration for that team that accomplished the mission, that got to the Super Bowl, that did all the things that any NFL team sets out and wants to do. Chris, we're watching a team in the Dallas Cowboys right now continue to check off boxes here. They get, albeit a close win, an overtime win, over a New England Patriots team that we know isn't necessarily a bunch of world beaters, but I feel like we're starting to get to the point of the season where I feel like we've made up our mind on the Cowboys enough that they are legit Super Bowl contenders where we can easily wash this one away and say, hey, Chris, good teams find a way to win.
Well, Gojo, we didn't have any questions about the Cowboys offense coming into this season. I mean, the only thing that you might be able to raise a concern about was whether or not they'd be able to stay healthy. The biggest questions that we had about this team overall was what was the defense going to look like under Dan Quinn, and could those young players, you know, the team put draft picks in the last couple of years, were they going to be able to develop to the point where that unit could at least be competent and complement what the offense brought to the table? And through the first 6 weeks of the season, I mean, I got to say it, the returns have been outstanding on this defense. I mean, led by Trevon Diggs and Michael Parsons, they are as advertised. And yesterday, you saw Randy Gregory come alive and get a couple of sacks too, including one game-changing play with a strip sack. So, I mean, this defense continues to be disruptive. You saw a couple of takeaways yesterday, including the pick six. They blocked the punt. Yes, I'm going to give the defense credit because they make up the majority of the special teams players too.
That's a fair point.
And the fact that they were able to come through and do that, I mean, listen, man, this is an impressive defense. Like, I mean, it's not going to wow you in terms of the yards and the metrics, but they do take the ball away. They're opportunistic. And listen, when you put those two things together with that offense playing as dominant as they are, I mean, the Dallas Cowboys are one of the best teams, if not the best team in the entire NFL.
Kenny and Golic Jr. reminding you, be a part of Dr. Kenny and Golic Jr. Nation on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. Hit us up at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. ESPN Nation's presented by Dr. Pepper. College football is heating up, and so are the fans. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve. And we'll take all your NFL weekend reaction, 888-SAY-ESPN. But, Chris, that Dallas Cowboys defense seems to be the right defense for the NFL now, right? We've seen over and over again, really, as the Kansas City Chiefs have come through their rise to power, that in modern football that's predicated on spreading things out and scoring a bleep mess of points, you just need a defense that's going to stop just enough, that's going to turn the ball back over for you just enough, be opportunistic enough. Like, I know, and I was talking to Dominique Foxworth about this earlier on Debatable, like, defense wins championships is going to be something that's harder and harder to sell people, but a defense like this can be a part of a championship team.
No question about it, especially with the way that they take the football away. Like, that's the biggest thing. Like, they're second in the NFL in takeaways. They've got 14 through the first six games. Like, if they can continue to keep up that pace, then, yeah, this defense absolutely would be championship caliber. It reminds you of the championship defense that the Saints had when Drew Brees won his chip. Like if it feels like it's going in that direction. Yeah, they're not going to, be a lockdown defense like the Baltimore Ravens in 2000 or like the 85 Bears, but what they're going to do is complement the offense, get takeaways, get extra possessions, field position in that way, and then the offense does the rest. The offense takes care of the heavy lifting. So, yeah, I think this defense is legit. and they're only going to get better as they get more reps, more games under their belt, man. This is a new scheme that they're learning under Dan Quinn, and these are young players, so they're only going to get better as they continue to get more seasoning. So I'm excited about what they could potentially be once we get to November and December, because they're certainly going to be better on the back half of this season than they are in the front half. They've got a bye week to kind of reassess, take inventory, look at the things that they do well, look at the things that they need to improve on. But, I mean, you know, this Dallas Cowboys team, the arrow is pointed in the right direction. The trajectory is all the way up for this group.
So we've got offense, check. We know Dak Prescott, calf strain. Saw him in a boot in the postgame press conference, but it sounds like that's all precautionary. They'll take a look at that. Defense ascending in the right direction. Is there anything that could derail this Cowboys team? Ryan Clark, our ESPN NFL analyst, was on Get Up and pointed square at one man as the source of the Cowboys' problems.
Oh, he's the absolute worst coach on the entire staff. Mike McCarthy is what's going to hold the Dallas Cowboys back from winning the Super Bowl. If we get down the stretch and we're going to have to point to one person that made a mistake, one person that didn't do their job well, it's going to be Mike McCarthy. In all of these weeks, in these 6 weeks, and I'm not here calling for his job. So I want to say that first. I'm not saying that Mike McCarthy should be fired. Sure. What I'm saying is he should do his job better. When you look at this team, you look at the quarterback doing his job, yeah. Running back doing his job, defense doing their job. Do you have anything to say about Kellen Moore other than that he's going to be a head coach next year? Anything to say about Dan Quinn other than that he's reinvented himself as a play caller and defensive coordinator, and he has this defense playing ball well? The only coach we have spoken about from the Dallas Cowboys, and it hasn't been glowing, is Mike McCarthy.
It's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. And Chris, Mike McCarthy, the late game decision making last night, kicking a field goal late instead of going for it on 4th-and-1 in plus territory. Some of these things that continually come up with Mike McCarthy and clock management here. And what RC said about Kellen Moore going on to become a head coach made me start to think, man, is there some kind of pressure on them to get this done this year? Because it looks like if they don't, they're going to lose Kellen Moore to somebody next year, and that might put a little more stress than they're comfortable with on Mike McCarthy, the offensive play caller.
But are they going to lose Kellen Moore, though, Gojo? Like, that's the part that I'm not so certain about. I mean, if this thing doesn't end in the Dallas Cowboys lifting the Lombardi Trophy, then I think Jerry Jones would be inclined to move on from Mike McCarthy if that means that he can keep Kellen Moore as his head coach. I mean, let's not forget that Jerry Jones is not ashamed or not deterred from having a head coach in waiting type of situation. Like, I remember when I was playing for the Cowboys in 2007, they made the decision to hire Jason Garrett as their offensive coordinator / head coach in waiting before they hired Wade Phillips, who would be the head coach. Like, that's what Jerry Jones did. So to me, it's not outside of the realm of possibility that Kellen Moore might just be sitting tight beyond, you know, this season, and could potentially be elevated to the Dallas Cowboys head coach if Mike McCarthy stumbles along the way. If things play out like RC just described, and Mike McCarthy and his decision-making is a part of the reason why this team doesn't accomplish the ultimate goal, yeah, it wouldn't shock me to see Jerry Jones fire Mike McCarthy after a 13-14 win season. That would not surprise me at all, just given what we've seen from Jerry Jones in the past and the level of urgency that he and the rest of the people in that organization have with trying to win a championship.
It's a shame that pre-2020 offseason analytics sleepover that he had with Jerry Jones wouldn't net him a longer leash and all that. I, for one, am shocked. Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. And for anyone that thinks that that's, you know, sensationalist or sounding the alarm too early, what RC's talking about is if it gets down to it with another team that's comparable to them in a spot that matters, where all of a sudden, yeah, Dak's going to be able to throw you out of most situations. Trevon Diggs coming up with a lot of timely plays now. But if you're in the postseason where everything matters and decision-making all of a sudden is the things that undermine you, everyone's only going to have one place to look, and that's Mike McCarthy. Now, those are problems for later on, because the Cowboys are set on the path that they are going on now, provided everyone stays healthy. Coming up next, though, Chris and I were both in the building for a game that showed the New York Giants are far, far away from that conversation, why their head coaching woes and decisions may have to come sooner than later. We will get to that after this word from AT&T. If there are friends and family members that you haven't talked to in a while, don't worry. It's never too late to reconnect. To help, AT&T is offering deals on the latest smartphones. It's not complicated. Everyone deserves something new. So, AT&T is giving new and existing customers their best deals on every smartphone. even the latest ones. Restrictions and exceptions may apply. Visit att.com for details.
Crossing the field left side, it's Cooper Kupp at the 10, to the 5, to the pylon. Touchdown, Cooper Kupp. Touchdown, LA! Cooper Kupp to the end zone for the second time. It's a blowout in the Meadowlands.
That was the sound here on Canty and Golic Jr. of the Giants' 38-11 loss to the Los Angeles Rams at MetLife. And Chris Canty and I were both in attendance there. I was watching the game from the stands. Chris was getting ready to go down and celebrate a 10-year reunion for a great Super Bowl team that he was a part of, a great memory and a great moment for everyone in that stadium. But Chris, I want you to tell the story about getting down to the field, because this was a close game for a while at the beginning while it was going on. The Giants kick a field goal early. They're leading for a while on this one, and then it was gone.
Yeah, things took a hard left turn in the second quarter. So the Giants won the first quarter 3-0, and you just felt like this was going to be one of those games that was going to be closer than the experts thought, because the Giants potentially playing inspired football because of the celebration of the Super Bowl 46 team, the 10th anniversary of that. You know, all of the fans in the building, there was a little bit of extra juice knowing that the Rams were flying high coming into this game. It just felt like a spot where the Giants would be able to come up with one of those performances that would make it a much more competitive game than anybody could have predicted. But again, like in that second quarter, things kind of started to turn. The worm turned, as they say. It started with the touchdown catch, Robert Woods catching the ball in the middle of the zone, low red zone. Nobody to be found to tackle him. He skirts in for a touchdown, 7-3 game. They come upstairs to the suites to get all of the former players to get us to come down and organize so we could take the field at halftime. And so it's a 7-3 game. I'm getting on the elevator. It's like 9 minutes to go in the second quarter. And by the time we all get organized, get our jerseys on, and we're standing in the tunnel getting ready to walk out, I looked at my phone and it said the score of the game was 28-3, and I'm wondering what the hell happened. Like, that escalated quickly. Like, how in the world did this thing get so bad so quickly? But then I got a chance to go back and watch the game last night, and you see it. It's the story of Daniel Jones with the turnovers, the miscues, the mistakes. It was a strip fumble, then it was an interception, throwing the ball into triple coverage, trying to target Evan Engram, and Taylor Rapp comes up with the play. Like, those are the things that put this team in a tough spot. And I get that the Giants were a little bit shorthanded yesterday, but your quarterback can't make those types of mistakes to put more pressure on everybody else. And unfortunately, that was the case yesterday for the Giants, and they ended up digging themselves a hole that they couldn't come out of in the second half.
I hated that was there to, like, pour any sort of cold water on a moment for you, because you guys got a hell of an ovation out there. People were losing it. Tom Coughlin gets up there and makes a speech at halftime for everyone. Like, Chris, I feel like maybe the team could have used some of that juice from Coach there, because he was ready to go.
Yeah, I mean, Coach Coughlin gave an amazing speech, and I'm just sitting there thinking, well, maybe he should have been in the locker room giving the speech to the team rather than Joe Judge, who's talking about being on submarines with his guys and patching leaks. I don't understand where this team is at right now, but it's not headed in a good direction, and now I think it's fair to question everything that's happening around the organization. Not only with Dave Gettleman, the general manager, I think it's fair to question the head coach and his methods and whether or not that flies in today's NFL. And I think you have to continue to have the conversation about whether or not Daniel Jones is the future franchise quarterback.
Let's start with the submarine captain first. Here was Joe Judge in a way that'll make that comment somehow make sense. The Giants head coach in their postgame presser talking about what lies ahead.
I'm just telling you right now, like, we don't have a room full of guys right now looking around and wondering. We don't have a room full of guys who are waiting for next year. We don't have a room full of guys who are waiting for someone to show up and save us. Okay, the only one who can make an impact to change anything that we're doing are all the men in that room. The coaches, the players, that's it, okay? So we're in that submarine right now, all right? If something happens wrong in that submarine, it's got to be someone on that ship to step up and save that thing, right? You spring a leak, someone's got to plug that thing for you. No one's coming. No one gets there in time to help you if you don't fix it yourselves. So we rely on ourselves.
First off, I can't imagine anything scarier than being trapped in a leaking submarine. Second off, I'm not sure if this is the crew I want to be trapped inside said submarine with. Now, weird analogies aside, Chris, this is going to start to get hotter sooner and sooner, because you're right about Daniel Jones, you're right about everybody else here, but Joe Judge came over here trying to do what we'd seen so many other people try and fail. bring the New England Patriots system of law and order, of hard bleep, you know what, football into an environment that does not have Tom Brady, that doesn't have years of building up a team and a way of doing things that has shown you results over the course of time, and trying to implement it and act like it's going to work and jumpstart this thing. And so, because of that, we find ourselves in a familiar spot. Outside of really Bill O'Brien, of the Patriot assistants we'd seen get meaningful time coaching, that really hasn't been able to work other places, and New York is starting to prove that again.
Yeah, and Joe Judge doesn't get a pass this year, right? I mean, last year, you could understand why they got out to a slow start, 1-7 in the first half. It was a COVID year, no OTAs, modified training camp, no preseason games. You can understand why they started slow, and then fans were willing to overlook the slow start because they finished in the second half going 5-3. So there was a lot of optimism around Joe Judge. The franchise finally felt like they were on solid footing because you heard some of the same things from Joe Judge that you had heard from coaches that the Giants have had success with in the past, like channeling that Bill Parcells being a tough disciplinarian. This is what we're going to be, a hard-nosed football team. Same thing with Tom Coughlin, but yet the results just aren't there. And as you continue to do that, if you start 1-5, I mean, it's going to get to the point where a lot of those guys in the locker room start looking around at the coaching staff and wondering whether or not they're going to be able to find the answers to get them where they want to go. Like, I mean, if this thing continues to go the direction that it's going, Mike, you're going to have guys start shipping the cars home, man. Like, that's where this is going. And unfortunately, I just don't have the confidence that Joe Judge and his staff is going to be able to get this thing turned around. So, yeah, the conversation around him and the noise around whether or not he's earned the right to continue to be the Giants coach is only going to continue to be amplified right alongside Dave Gettleman if things continue to trend in the direction that they're going right now.
Yeah, and I think those two get the billing on me before Daniel Jones. Like, Daniel Jones is a comparatively easier decision to make here because it's just whether to pay him or not. You don't have to necessarily make that decision after this season in a way with any immediacy, but you got to have the decision makers in place to potentially make use of what you've got coming up next year. A couple of potential first round picks, a lot of capital, and a cap situation that's not going to make a lot of the other decisions easier. You mentioned Joe Judge getting a pass, though. Rex Ryan, ESPN NFL analyst and former head coach of a New York football team, was on Get Up and talked about how surprised he was that that had been the case.
You got a quarterback that had a concussion,
right?
7 days earlier. He's in the game and you're running short yardage plays with him.
Quarterback sneak.
What? Yeah. He gets hit in the head. What a surprise. He had a bad day, turned the ball over four times. I don't put that on Daniel Jones. I put that square on the shoulders of the head coach. Do you understand how difficult it is to come back from a concussion, let alone 1 week?
Yeah.
Nobody does that in this game. Daniel Jones is a legitimate tough guy.
Yeah.
All right? His thing rings so hollow to me, man. And look, he got the job saying he can handle the whole roster. You're a bottom-of-the-roster guy. You were a special team coach, and that's how you perform. So to me, I'm not surprised by this. I'm surprised that he's gotten a pass so far from this New York media. That is my thing. I'm surprised by that.
Sounds like Rex is kind of wishes that he had gotten some of that pass, but, you know.
I will say this, Mike. I'm not a doctor, nor did I play one on TV, and I didn't stay at a Holiday Inn. I trust the medical staff of the Giants. If they say, if Ronnie Barnes and his staff say Daniel Jones was healthy enough to play, then he's healthy enough to play. I mean, if this situation calls for it and you need a quarterback sneak to try to pick up the first down, if that's what your offensive coordinator thinks is in the team's best interest, then you call to play. Like, if he's not healthy enough to be doing a quarterback sneak, then he's not healthy enough to be out there on the football field. I don't know. That's just my point of view on that one.
He's not. Even late in the game, though, Chris, I mean, this one got out of hand in a while. The Rams pulled their starters darn near the third quarter of this game here. I guess that was just a lot of people looking at this going, all right, we've already lost enough. Do we really want to put – because Daniel Jones has been getting hit around all day out there behind that line. Did we really want to put him in harm's way any more than we did?
Yeah, and I think that's a fair question to realize that you really have nothing else to play for, to live to fight another week. That, to me, is a separate conversation than we're putting our quarterback in harm's way, and that's why he performed poorly with all of the turnovers. That part I don't buy. But as far as whether or not he deserves to be in the game late when it's not competitive, that is a fair question to ask the head coach, and I'm not sure that Joe Judge is going to come up with any answers that's going to satisfy the media or the fan base. Because the fact is, you know what Daniel Jones is made of. You see the competitive toughness that the kid displayed when he was out there in that Cowboys game, and you saw it being ready and available for his team to play in this game. So I don't question the decisions that they made with Daniel Jones in terms of the play calling of it. But I do think it's still fair to question whether or not Daniel Jones is going to be the franchise's future at the quarterback spot, just because I think, you know, in terms of the body of work and the sample size, I don't think that you can definitively say that he's your guy.
Yep, I think that question, though, firmly third on the list behind, is Dave Gettleman still the one that should be making the decisions, and should Joe Judge still be the one coaching these players? And we're going to have in the next couple of weeks, I think, a lot of time to assess those decisions for the Giants coming up after that 38-11 loss to the Rams at home. Coming up next, though, one of the most hyped games in Week 6 turned into a blowout, all thanks to the man who had a lot of questions about him this offseason and has gone about answering every one again and again this season. We'll get to who that was next here. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
Here's the snap. Herbert looking left, throwing left, too high off the hands of Evans. Incomplete. Covered by Humphrey, and a turnover on downs by Los Angeles.
Canty and Golic Jr. brought to you by on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app series. What did I just do? Hold on. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty.
Listen, I don't think you're wrong.
Are we presented by ESPN Radio?
Yeah.
I guess technically. I'm not sure where that came from here. What I wanted to say was ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive Insurance is proud to support veterans with its annual Keys to Progress vehicle giveaway program, now celebrating 9 years of donating vehicles and helping veterans in need. Learn more at keystoprogress.com, but apparently I couldn't get to that point. So, Chris Canty, instead, before we get to Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens, another one of your former teams in here, I did want to throw this one out here because I'm assuming everyone here saw what happened, all of the garbage thrown on a field at the Tennessee Vols game again, with Ole Miss, Lane Kiffin back in town. The Vols had a chance late here. Things got a little hectic, and fans started throwing golf balls and mustard bottles and all sorts of garbage on the field, Chris. The SEC announced penalties for Tennessee, including a $250,000 fine.
Ouch.
And using all available resources to identify the individuals who threw objects at the playing field or the opposing team, all individuals identified would be prohibited from attending Tennessee athletic events for the remainder of the athletic year. It is worth noting the conference is not suspending alcohol sale privileges for Tennessee at this time. They knew better than to mess up the cash, Chris.
Oh, no question about it, man. But what did you expect, man? Lane Kiffin going back there and getting a win with Ole Miss, especially after the way that he left Tennessee. You knew that the fans were going to feel some kind of way about it. I'm not condoning how the fans reacted. I'm not condoning their behavior. All I'm saying is when you get them fired up after tailgating all morning long and then witnessing what they watched in their home stadium, you knew that that could lead to something like that happening. It was an absolute ugly scene. And I got to say this, it's not something that I didn't anticipate because, again, Lane Kiffin left a bad taste in those fans' mouths when he left that program the way that he did.
It's amazing if you let a bunch of people high on two games of really high offensive production for Tennessee drink all day leading up to a night game against a coach they hate, something like this would happen. I, for one, am shocked in the world of college football. Now, Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Something even less shocking than that, though, is this run from Lamar Jackson, Chris. Like, are people really going to act surprised that Lamar Jackson is going out here and playing like someone who's already hoisted an MVP in his career?
I think people are, just because of the way that Lamar is doing it. I mean, last year it was really about, you know, Lamar's legs leading this dynamic rushing attack, but I think now people realize you have to respect what Lamar is capable of doing and this Ravens offense moving the football through the air. Now, yesterday, not so much. I mean, it was one of those performances where they had 38 rush attempts for almost 200 yards. So it went back to the basics for the Baltimore Ravens. But I'm just surprised that they were able to dictate the complexion of the game the way that they did, knowing how explosive that Chargers offense is. I mean, you're talking about a team that, what, hung 47 against the Cleveland Browns the week before? Like, this is a high-flying Chargers offense led by Justin Herbert, who is one of the better young quarterbacks in our game today. And yet, they ran into a buzzsaw with the Baltimore Ravens, and the Ravens did it with defense, tight man-to-man coverage, and then Lamar Jackson being a big part of that ground game and really dominating time of possession. I mean, listen, the Ravens held the ball for 38 minutes yesterday. Like, 38 minutes. I mean, so winning time of possession 2-1, That's a pretty good formula when it comes to trying to slow down Justin Herbert and that Chargers offense. And I thought the other good thing that Wink Martindale and his defense did yesterday was being able to win on those fourth down situations. We've seen Brandon Staley be one of the more aggressive coaches, using the analytics to kind of dictate their decision-making and what they're going to do as far as game script. And yesterday, the Ravens were up for the task, being able to come up with some critical fourth down stops in the first three quarters of that ball game. And that really, in my opinion, is what tilted the game in the Ravens' favor.
Yeah, Chris, I had no problem with those fourth down decisions either. I had some issues with the play calling in certain spots here,
yes.
But this is what happens. If we are going, you and I talked about this, eventually these were going to not hit in the same rate that we had seen before for the Chargers, and people were going to try and act like now Brandon Staley is the reason they're losing. The decision-making process is the same. ESPN's win probability model supported going forward, even on that fourth down from their own 19 in that spot. But Chris, this was going to happen eventually. It doesn't change the process of the decision-making, but the outcome on those plays and some of the plays they chose there, I think, were the disagreeable part.
Yeah, the one that was egregious to me was early in the third quarter. Like, I just didn't understand the call. I hated it. You're backed up on your own 19. It's fourth and one. Deep in your own territory, like, give your quarterback some more options throughout the down to be able to find a way to convert. Like, get him out on the edge of the defense. Give him, you know, a couple of different reads downfield, and if nothing's there, at least he has the option or the potential to turn the ball up and try to convert with his legs. But you didn't do that. You went with a stop route, and there seems like the timing between the receiver and the quarterback were off, and it was one of those errant throws from Justin Herbert. So I don't like not giving your quarterback a few more options throughout the course of the down to see if they can convert. So, yeah, I'm with you. I didn't necessarily disagree with the call to go for it. I just didn't like the play call. But, I mean, this is one of those situations that Brandon Staley's shown that he's got the utmost trust in his young quarterback, Justin Herbert. It just so happens that Justin Herbert had an off day at the office yesterday.
Yeah, didn't reward that trust in the same way another quarterback did, rewarding big trust, as we've
big
heard about
trust
before. Chris, I think at this point Lamar Jackson has to be the MVP frontrunner. Like, I know Kyler Murray and the Cardinals are undefeated right now.
Oof.
I know that deserves credit. But I saw Paul Hembekides tweet this out, one of the great ESPN stats guys here at the Worldwide Leader. The two teams with the most players on injured reserve right now are the Ravens and the Lions. The Ravens have 16 and the Lions have 14. The Ravens are 5-1 and the Lions are 0-6. Like, that is, to me, a Lamar Jackson and John Harbaugh stat of what they have been able to do as player and coach, overcoming injuries in that defensive secondary, overcoming injuries at running back and offensive tackle. Like, that entire running back room for the Ravens got decimated by injury before the season, and all they did was have all three guys that they brought over as free agents get in the end zone yesterday within the body of one game. And you can only do that when the guy that's captaining that ship on offense in Lamar Jackson is playing the way he has.
Yeah, I mean, he is the most dynamic player in the NFL with the ball in his hands just because he can do so many things. Like, in most games, he's going to be the fastest person that that's on the field. Like, I mean, unless they're facing off against the Kansas City Chiefs with Tyreek Hill, like, he is the fastest person that's going to be on the field. And he just so happens to have a howitzer attached to his shoulder as well. And he's finally figuring out how to use that aspect of his physical gifts. So Lamar Jackson is a singular talent. And I said it after last week's game, when they impressed me with the way that they performed against the Colts and that come-from-behind win on Monday Night Football. I said that Steve Bisciotti, John Harbaugh, and Eric DaCosta need to figure out a way to sit down with Lamar and get this contract hammered out, because it's only going to get more expensive for them from here on out. He's shown the ability to be able to consistently win a variety of ways, whether it's in the passing game, whether it's in the rushing attack. Like, Lamar Jackson poses so many different threats. He's a nightmare to game plan for. And I'm convinced, man, like, this guy is one of the best quarterbacks in our league. I don't think we need to qualify it. I don't think we need to put any caveats to it. He's that damn good, and folks need to accept it's just going to look a little bit different than other quarterbacks, but it doesn't stop it from being impactful in terms of his team winning.
Lamar Jackson passed Dan Marino for the most wins by a quarterback before turning 25. That stat is telling, but coming up next, I'll give you another team that's the perfect example of the difference between Lamar and almost everybody else. We'll get to that next here. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Man, I'm really having trouble with words today.
Hey, listen, just power through it, man. Nobody will even notice.
No, I know no one notices, but you know what? Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. I like to play with the cards up, Chris. If I'm having an off day on this one, the people deserve to know that I'm not just trying to necessarily butcher these words the way I have. It just comes out that way. So when I'm trying to say the road to the World Series goes through ESPN Radio, catch all the postseason action presented by AutoZone on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app, and instead I try and say the road to the ESPN Radio goes through the World Series, I feel like people can get confused, and I don't want that to happen. That's not what we're here for.
No, we don't want people to be confused, but I, you know, there's always levels to this. So when you say you're having an off day, like, is this like a Jared Goff off day? Is this a Baker Mayfield off day? Or is this a Daniel Jones type of off day?
Ooh, man. I don't know if we've
I need you to help me out with that one.
I don't know if I've quite reached Goff levels yet of this to where I'm going to be called out by any of our bosses. And we can get to plenty of that coming up soon, because Dan Campbell, in a lot of ways, has had a good year in the middle of a bad year. And I feel like this is another one of those spots where he kept it real in a way that players can appreciate. But the Baker Mayfield bad, I didn't get hurt on this play, Chris, so I don't think it can qualify as that either, because from bad to worse, right? This Browns team that started off the season with so much promise, with staring down the Kansas City Chiefs even in a loss, and a roster that looked like it was ready to bully people, that group looked tired and beat up this weekend. And now with Baker Mayfield falling on that shoulder that was already injured, that non-throwing shoulder, during the game in a way that's going to get looked at, I feel like the wheels are coming off for the Browns here in a way that won't be able to be rectified this season.
Yeah, J.J. Watt channeling his inner Cobra Kai with sweeping the leg, ends up getting that turnover. But yeah, I mean, that's the injury on top of the insult that was getting beat down by the Arizona Cardinals at home. Like, this was supposed to be an opportunity for the Browns to get right and to prove something to, if no one else, themselves, that they could be able to compete amongst the best teams in the National Football League. And I think they proved that they're not quite there yet. And Baker Mayfield, although we do see a lot of good things from him, he's not a great quarterback. And so I just feel like their margin for error seems like it's razor thin, and it's dependent on making sure that you have a supporting cast that's healthy and available. And right now, you're starting to see a lot of injuries for this Cleveland Browns team. They did get Odell Beckham Jr. back a couple of weeks ago, but you saw he dropped the pass on 4th and 1, a critical situation. And then you lost Kareem Hunt on that very same play for the next several weeks. So, I mean, Cleveland feels like they're hustling backwards right now. And, you know, this is going to be a tough situation for them to get past with this Baker Mayfield injury, because it seems like it's going to be something he's dealing with for the entirety of the season.
You mentioned down both starting running backs now, down both starting tackles. Here was Baker Mayfield in the post-game press conference talking about his injury.
First off, how are you feeling when your arm's in a sling? How bad is it?
Feels like
worse than the first time?
Probably. You know what? I'm going to get MRIs and stuff tomorrow, so we'll be able to find out more.
In a sense, if you'll be able to keep playing through this, Baker?
I do.
You will be able to keep playing through it?
Yes.
Is that, I mean, maybe you don't know yet, but is it the same, like a re-aggravation of the injury? Is it something new?
I mean, it dislocated again and then slipped out again on a non-contact play, so just got to figure out a way to get better.
Yeah, that's not great for a guy that was already injured. And Chris, I give him credit because he was running for his life most of that game in the pocket, trying to make things happen, but he's just not as capable in that way. And when we look at the top of the AFC North, that's the difference, is a banged-up Ravens team can look to Lamar Jackson to drag them to a place they would not otherwise be. Baker Mayfield's not going to drag a bad team into a great team. He can take a good team and make them great. He can take a great team and make them a Super Bowl. But he is not singularly capable of being the difference between you being a team that's banged up and injured all these spots and overcoming that for a lengthy time.
Yeah, and the tough part about that for the Browns is now they've got a short week with the Denver Broncos rolling into town. So, I mean, this is a situation where they're not going to get a lot of relief in the way of time to lick their wounds. They've got to find a way to be able to play better football, and I think at the heart of that has to be Baker Mayfield elevating his game to get the best out of everyone else. So This is going to be tough for the Cleveland Browns. If they want to salvage their season, they're going to have to get right in a hurry. Now, thankfully for them, the scheduling gods are looking favorably on them, because they've got the Broncos, the Steelers, they've got the Cincinnati Bengals, and New England Patriots. So this is a soft spot for them to land. They got to be able to make some hay right now.
They do. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. We'll have plenty more time to get to the other side of this one, the Cardinals team, who's won each of their first 4 road games by double digits right now, and where they stack in the NFC playoff picture. But coming up next, we got to answer maybe the biggest question to come off of this weekend in sports. Who the hell brings a golf ball to a football game? Next on ESPN Radio.